All right, so I'm going to switch topics here a little bit. One of the things I'm also interested in is seedling vigor, and so I'm going to talk a little bit about seedling vigor and carbon dynamics of the first true leaf. So with this study, when we talk about seedling vigor, for starters, there's some disagreement as to what constitutes a good measure of seedling vigor. There's a lot of different measurements that have been used in the past. So there, some individuals who use dry weight per plant as the, kind of the standard measure of seedling vigor, fresh weight, plant height. Actually, Dr. Borland, I believe, is the one who proposed these as far as rapid node development and true leaf differentiation, well-developed seedling roots and low incidence of disease. You know, the seedling roots in particular, this is something, and it's no different in this study. This is a field study where we're assessing seedling vigor. Early on, I mean, the roots are a pretty substantial sink for that cotton plant, right? And so the fact that we ignore it most of the time is an issue, and this is no different. This is, I'm just going to state up front that this is an inherent limitation to this particular study and field studies in general. You know, in greenhouse studies, if we can control the growth media and make sure that we get all those roots out, it's a little easier to get that data. But in the field, you know, just when we're doing a lot of other measurements, this is no different. We don't have any data on root development, but that is a major, that is of major importance. But what I'd like to focus on is that first true leaf. There is some indication in other species that the more rapidly that plant produces that first true leaf, the more able that plant is to assimilate carbon and translocate that to other parts of the plant, and that promotes vigorous seedling growth. All right, and so this was sort of the basis for this study. If we took, let's say, cultivars that we anticipated would differ in seedling vigor, let's say, all right, that the carbon dynamics of that first true leaf should be an indicator of vigor. For example, the more rapidly that first true leaf transitions to being a net exporter of carbon, right, that it's exporting carbon, that should promote vigorous seedling growth. And again, yes, a lot of that carbon's going into root growth and we're not quantifying it. So what are some other indicators that a seedling might grow more vigorously? All right, and so I want to talk a little bit about the very early stages after germination here. So after that seedling, after that radical initially protrudes, that post-germinative growth, but prior to those cotyledons becoming photosynthetically self-sufficient, let's say. In this particular, let's see here, I keep losing the mouse. In this particular phase of growth, the growth of that seedling is being fueled by the energy reserves in those cotyledons. All right. So one of the things that we've seen and others have seen is that seed mass is a pretty good indicator. Now this is assuming we have sufficient cool germ and all of this. We don't have any dormancy related issues still there, but that seed mass in most environments, so we've got all these different environments here, is a pretty good indicator of early seedling vigor. And I already mentioned to you that seedling vigor can be defined a number of different ways, and then here I'm defining it as dry weight per plant, okay? But you can see that there is a relationship between the planting seed mass and the early vigor of that seedling. And that could be due to the energy reserves that are available to that seedling, or the fact that those cotyledons are generally bigger as well when they come out of the ground when they emerge. And so what are they doing? They're intercepting more solar radiation. They could potentially be contributing more photosynthate to early growth. And so my question here is whether seed lot specific variation in vigor is associated with variation in the carbon dynamics of that first true leaf, okay? And so just to give you a little background about this study, it was conducted at the Langrigdon Research Farm in Tifton, Georgia. We had six different cultivars strictly selected based on seed mass, okay? Because we anticipated this would be a decent indicator of whether those seedlings would have more vigorous growth early on based on our previous research. We had a randomized complete block design with five replications. And the sampling, we had the first true leaf was sampled at 21 and 35 days after planting. In fact, We had whole plant, whole crop growth analysis at those times as well. Some of the carbohydrate assessments were not carried out at 35 days after planting. I'm going to primarily be focusing on that 21-day after planting time frame, but I'll kind of tell you as we're going along what we're talking about here, okay? So the growth measurements. At 21 to 35 days, we had first true leaf area, whole plant leaf area, dry weight, and from that we can calculate different growth indices. We can calculate the photosynthetic efficiency of those plants, so we can calculate net assimilation rate using growth analysis. So we've got, at these time frames, we've got growth analysis both measuring leaf area, whole plant leaf area, first true leaf area, and then of course getting dry weight as well. So fairly simple measurements, but it can tell us quite a bit about the growth of that plant. Nighttime physiological measurements. Yes, again, this is another nighttime study. This was conducted essentially, as I mentioned to you, we've seen some indication respiration is pretty closely related. We can have growth respiration, maintenance respiration, a number of different things going on. And that first true leaf, if it's at a different stage of expansion, some of it's more, you know, some of that respiration or more of that respiration is associated with growth maybe than maintenance. But anyway, this was measured three times per night for each plot between 10:30 p.m. and 3:30 a.m. So for this five-hour time frame, we have, like I say, three measurements of respiration, and we can obtain an average respiration rate per plot. All right, so we use this then to calculate the expected dry weight loss for that first true leaf during that particular period of time. And then to get our nighttime translocation rates, we measure specific leaf weight at the first sample time, specific leaf weight at that last sample time. All right. So once we subtract the expected change in specific leaf weight that would have resulted from the respiratory carbon losses, then we can attribute that change in specific leaf weight during the night to translocation, whether it's positive or negative, right? Whether it's that leaf is importing or exporting carbon during the night, we should have a good indication there. So we had a minimum of 12 plants per plot, and we would take our, you know, 1 centimeter leaf disc out of each one. So we had this pretty well standardized, and I think was pretty representative of each plot. And then I'm just expressing this as grams of dry weight per meter squared per meter squared leaf area over that five-hour time frame. Now, from there, I wanted to say, okay, there could be differences with the efficiency, you know, with which these different cultivars export carbon. And when I say that, I don't know that I've seen this anywhere. It may be out there somewhere. I just said, okay, we're going to call this translocation efficiency. So how much carbon did that leaf export per unit carbon burn, right, during the night? So I thought this was another way to kind of look at the data here. And I'm only talking about the data at 21 days after planting. Again, there was I could blame it on my graduate student at 35 days, but we point is we don't have the 35-day sample for some of this data, okay? Nighttime physiological assessments. The other thing that we measured was carbohydrate balance, and I'll keep it relatively simple here. We looked at both soluble carbohydrates at that 10:30 p.m., 3:30 a.m. measurement time. Looked at soluble using an ethanol extract, hot ethanol extract, and then also looked at starch content. Now, it turns out those concentrations in a not fully expanded leaf, first true leaf, are pretty low at that point in the development, but we'll talk a little bit about that as well as we go along here. All right, so there's a lot, as I mentioned previously, there's a lot of focus on photosynthesis, right, the pathway by which all carbon enters the system. And so there's a lot of interest in that. So I would have anticipated that we would have had some relationship between the photosynthetic rate of that first true leaf and vigor of that seedling. All right, so we did a lot. I was the one doing this, but did a lot of measurements, you know, net photosynthesis, actual quantum yield, electron transport. And so I'm going to just kind of get into some of the results. So for that true leaf area, I think it's good to point out, just to kind of characterize where we were when we did these assessments. That first true leaf area, this is all in, and I didn't specify, but in centimeters squared. I just want you to look here. At that 21-day after planting time frame, which is where I'm going to be focusing for the rest of this talk, okay? We were at anywhere from 39 to 57% of the area at 35 days after planting. Now, we don't know if that was fully expanded. You know, we didn't do an additional measurement to say that, so I'm being a little cautious here. But we can clearly say that these leaves at that 21-day after planting time frame were not fully expanded, right? So I've got to do this just to show you I actually did the measurements. This is one half of the correlation matrix. This is the other half of the correlation matrix. So I'm going to just kind of highlight some of the key points. Seedling vigor and net photosynthesis. No significant correlation there between seedling vigor, and seedling vigor being defined as dry weight per seedling. No significant relationship there. Little bit surprised. What about dark respiration? Okay, no significant relationship. And remember, we've got probably growth respiration. We've got, you know, and we've got translocation going on. So there's a lot of different things going on, but no relationship there. Seedling vigor and quantum yield, electron transport rate. No, none of these things were indicative of seedling vigor. Now, what was, and this was pretty, and given the amount of work that went into it, it's pretty nice. What was a pretty good indicator of seedling vigor, or what seemed to, you know, be related or associated with seedling vigor, was translocation rate of that first true leaf. So nighttime translocation rate of that first true leaf was associated with seedling vigor, at least at this 21-day after planting time frame. We don't have that additional sample date for this particular data. Translocation efficiency even more strongly related there. So, you know, the more carbon exported per unit respire, we had greater seedling vigor. Now, the soluble carbohydrate content I thought was interesting. We saw the opposite sort of relationship there, saw an inverse relationship between soluble. This was, and I'm just picking out some of the stronger relationships here, okay? We saw an inverse relationship between the soluble carbohydrate content and seedling vigor. Now, that was interesting to me. I'm trying to rationalize this here. But, you know, we have a leaf that's not fully expanded, right? That leaf is using carbohydrates for its own growth. It's exporting some because we showed you that plant is actually exporting some at night. And this was all during the night period. This is the average soluble carbohydrate content during that period. In general, there's a couple things I want to point out. Soluble carbohydrate content was low, for starters, because this is lower than we typically see for fully expanded leaves. And the other thing is this inverse relationship, which I thought was interesting. Okay, now why is this? And I, you know, if we think about some of the dominant sinks on the plant, the roots probably number one at this point, but we've got leaf development, so those developing leaves are also sinks early on in the development of that plant. The more leaf area we had per plant, the higher the translocation rate. Not surprising, though, because that's more of the dry matter as well at that point in development, okay? If we look, though, and this I thought was interesting, the more leaf area we had on the plant, the lower the soluble carbohydrate content of that first true leaf. So I think that if you've got a more vigorously growing plant early in that development, the carbohydrate content's just kept pretty low in that first true leaf, all right? With that, I'll be happy to take any questions. I keep leaving it only a little bit of time for questions, but